Hey everyone, I'm Isabella Taborda.
And I'm Reese McDonnell, and we're taking Supa together.
And now we're doing the ultimate podcast for each week. We choose an important woman in history who we feel like should be talked about a lot more.
This is her legacy.
Okay, so this week's topic is Phyllis Wheatley.
Yes, Phyllis Wheatley. I've never heard about her before. We did research for this, have you?
So actually, when I was in like fourth or fifth grade, I think, our teacher, she did not actually like teaching. At least for history, she liked teaching about science, but history was just not her thing. So she used to put on this show called Liberty Kids. I think it was like a YouTube show, basically. And it was about the Revolutionary War and like these three kids who worked under Benjamin Franklin. And they had like the slave named Moses. Well, he wasn't a slave, he was an indentured servant. But like, he was a slave, he bought his own freedom. And then I think it was the first episode, maybe.
Okay.
I think it was Moses and the three kids. He like brought them. They were in Boston for some reason, and they went to go visit Phyllis.
Okay, was it around the time of the Boston Tea Party or massacre? Or?
I think it was. I think, like, obviously, like, none of this stuff actually happened. Like, Phyllis obviously was a real person, but I don't think, like, obviously he probably wasn't that exact because it was a kids' show, so I don't think these three little kids knock on her door in the middle of the night asking to stay in her stable, but...
Don't know how accurate the show was.
Yeah, no.
Okay. So you've heard of her, but I haven't. Do you want to give us a little synopsis about her?
So basically, she was born in either like Senegal or Gambia. Just so we know, she's from the West Africa area, and she was born around 1753. But obviously, she was an African-American woman, and at this time, as we know, they didn't really keep exact dates or locations because there was no good records kept on them because obviously they were inferior and stuff like that, even though none of that's true. And then, obviously... Lots of people were going into West Africa to capture slaves at the time. Unfortunately, she was one of them. So around age 8, she was brought to Boston, Massachusetts on a slave ship. And she's always been born with, like, very bad health conditions. So she was brought there in fragile health. And John Wheatley bought her to become a personal servant to his wife, Susanna. And actually, a fun fact that I found on biography.com, the ship she came on to America was actually named the Phyllis.
Oh, that's so interesting.
So... Then she was obviously a very smart girl. Her master, Susanna, John, and the two kids who were actually twins, Mary and Nathaniel, picked up on how intelligent she was and how quickly she can learn things. So the Wheatleys were a very educated family, and they chose to teach her things and actually educate her. So they taught her how to read and write. They taught her not only English, but also Latin and Greek, and encouraged her to read. But they also taught her about, like, theology, ancient history, literature, and mythology. And I found that on womenshistory.org because obviously she's, like, an important woman in history, too.
That's really interesting because at this time, like, a big thing was that most people did not educate their slaves.
Not even that. Just, like, people in general were not that educated. That's why we have the Electoral College. Like,
true.
The general public was not educated. But obviously they were.
Yeah. So then moving on, her thing that she became famous off of was her poems. So she published her first poem at age 13, and the poem was about two men who had almost drowned at sea, and it was printed in the Newport Mercury. I found this on Britannica.com, and this was a newspaper source at the time. But her first notable poem that she is kind of famous for is called On the Death of Reverend Mr. George Whitefield, which was published as a broadside in cities such as Boston, New York, and Philadelphia, and got national acclaim. This poem was also printed in London, and in London and England is where her poems became the most famous. Over the next few years of her life, from like age 13 on, she printed a number of poems prominent in English and colonial leaders. So this specific poem, her first one, that's called On the Death of Reverend Mr. George Whitefield, it was about a prominent English Anglican preacher. And I'll read a little excerpt of the poem. It says, "Hail, happy saint, on thy immortal throne, possess of glory, life, and bliss unknown. We hear no more the music of thy tongue. Thy wonted auditories cease to throng. The sermons in unequaled accents flowed, and every bosom with devotion glowed. Thou didst in strains of eloquence refined, inflamed the heart and captive the mind. Unhappy we set the setting sun deplore, so glorious once, but ah, it shines no more." And I found this on Bartleby.com. She's so talented for such a young age.
No, she is. And like when I was doing my research, like a lot of, because she was a poet. Obviously, if she wasn't, I don't think there would be any much near as much information as we were able to get on her. And poets.org, like, I guess if she wasn't a poet, we would have not found a lot of her information because she was on poets.org.
Yeah, poets.org. And then poemofquotes.com basically explain this poem by calling Whitefield a happy saint. And it speaks about how people will not be able to hear the music of thy tongue. Wheatley goes on to discuss how great his preaching was and how great of a man he was. And basically just really, like she almost loves him in this poem, it shows. Whitefield, she explains how he wanted the best for America and Africa. And she ends the poem by stating she hopes she sees him again in heaven. This poem is a single stanza, and it's written in heroic couplets, which is rhyming couplets written in iambic pentameter. And it's got interesting techniques that she uses throughout her writing. And I don't know about you, but I'm 16 years old, and I cannot write a haiku.
No.
She's so talented.
She was 13.
13 years old.
I was not writing anything at 13. I was...
Can't write a haiku
Watching Liberty Kids.
Watching Liberty Kids.
So, like, obviously, she started with these poems. And then in 1773, she gained lots of fame because she had this one poem. But now, she's not only writing this one poem. She's writing lots of poems. She actually had a whole book called Poems on Various Subjects, Religious and Moral. And that's what she gained a lot of her fame from. Selina Hastings, I think that's how you say her name. She was the Countess of Huntingdon in England.
Very famous person.
So she was actually, like, the sponsor for this book. And that was, like, on the newyorker.com, apparently, because, like I said, she was very popular. So, like, if she was literally anybody else, we would not have this much information. But because she was such a prominent figure in, like, literature in general,
yeah,
we have so much information. So she also was the first African-American woman to publish a book in America, which is a pretty big deal, if you ask me.
That's huge.
And the second woman ever in America to publish a book of poems. So, like, not only was she just a book as an African-American, but she's also the second woman, white, black, Asian, whatever, to publish a book of poems. So, but people were inherently racist, as we know. Not a shocker. We know that already. So, to, like, kind of prove that she actually wrote this work, because no one was going to believe that this African-American woman wrote this poem of books by herself.
Or this book because of it was poems. So unusual at the time.
So, she was very well-liked in her community. And it included a preface in which 17 Boston men, including John Hancock, asserted that she did, in fact, write those poems. And then VC University just talks about how, like, where her books kind of became more famous. It gained a lot more attention in England as opposed to the States. Obviously, England had declining slavery while the States were still thriving in slavery. So she's very popular in London. But even though London was more of her supporters in England and everything, she was still a supporter of the Revolution. She wrote several poems in honor of George Washington and the Continental Army. George Washington actually, like, invited her to his headquarters in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And then he also invited her to Washington, D.C. in March of 1776. So she's pretty big.
So she's not only popular with common people, but she's popular with at the time, like, the future president of the United States, first president of the United States.
She was a big deal, and I think, like, it's just so shocking that, like, number one, she's a woman. That's already something against her. And now she has race as being another factor. She's still a slave. Like, let's keep in mind, she doesn't have her freedom yet.
Yeah.
But obviously, like, the Wheatleys, like, she had, like, nowhere near, and she knew herself. Like, she recognized that her conditions were so much better as opposed to, like, other slaves. So she recognized how much better her situation was. Obviously, she wouldn't mind having her freedom, but the Wheatleys did give her her fame, basically. They did teach her everything. Not saying she should have ever been a slave, but they did give her all of this information and how to write, read.
Her masters were definitely different from the rest because they let her go to London to promote her poetry, and she received medical treatment for the 8 ailment she has been dealing with since she was a kid, as we talked about from Liberty Kids.
Which is, like, also unheard of. Like, I don't know if you ever heard of a slave going to another continent.
To a doctor or even another continent. Yeah.
No, it's crazy.
Yeah. So they let her go to a different continent. She did eventually come back, and she returned to Boston. She was devastated by the deaths of several members of the Wheatley family, including Susanna, which is the reason she was hired. Susanna sadly died in 1774, and John, her master, in 1778. After that, she went on to marry a free African-American man named John Peters from Boston in 1778. They had three children who all very sadly died in infancy. And her and her husband constantly battled poverty, and Phyllis had to get a job as a maid in a boarding house with terrible conditions because they were so poor. However, she continued to write, but growing tensions with Britain and the war weakened her spirit. She tried to contact various publishers, but was unable to find support to publish her second volume. And we found all this information on poetryfoundation.org. Isn't that so sad that, like, she had such talent and she wasn't able to publish?
And I probably think if the war wasn't happening at the time, she probably would have been able to find someone. Yeah. But, like, let's be honest, like, no one's going to really focus on poetry when we're fighting a war. I know it's the sad truth, but it is.
Yeah. The arts kind of die when that happens, yeah.
We were all sad and warlike and depressed.
And then she sadly died in her mid-30s due to childbirth complications, and her death was on December 5th, 1784.
But, like, I know we're saying, like, obviously, like, early 30s is so young nowadays, but, like...
At the time, it was pretty good.
They had terrible hygiene, so she, like, in that time, lived a good life. So, I also want to talk about just, like... She is nowhere near as prominent in our regular history textbook as she should be, which is, like, the whole basis of our PowerPoint, like, women in history who need to be.
Yeah, her legacy. It's, like, keeping her legacy alive.
So, like, obviously that's our podcast all about, like, keeping these women's history alive. So, I think the big reason as why she's not so prominent, number one, she's African American.
Yeah.
During this time, they're, like... You know, they're not going to focus on the people. They're slaves. They're seen as animals. They're seen as, like, inferior. They're not going to be, like,
they're not seen as equals.
So just the fact that she even gained, like, fame in general. Like, even, like, in Liberty Kids, again, I know it probably wasn't the best source. But I know, like, he was like, oh, like, my people, like, all know about her. So she was very popular among the slave population who, I guess, were able to read or just knew about her. So that's one thing. But she was also famous in England, where slavery was dying in England.
Yeah.
So a lot of her fame was in England. So she might be in more, I guess, British textbooks. I doubt it because she's American, so probably not.
Yeah.
But probably more well-known in England than here. And not to mention, slavery was dying in England, but thriving here. So I guess she was, like, going to see, like, oh, why is a slave writing this? But in England, they're a little more accepting, I guess.
That's true. That's a good point. So yeah, she's not as prominent as she should be because she has such an amazing legacy, but I think it is still a miracle that there is so much information about her because she was an African-American woman in the 1700s in America where slavery was, as we've said, was thriving. But now we're going to focus on why they are an important figure in history, like what makes her so notable. So, well, she's had so many achievements. She is the second woman to publish poetry in America, which is just amazing. And she gives us more diversity to our history. It's mostly about... History in the 1700s is mostly about white males and how they founded our country. And while that is amazing, we need to talk about African Americans at this time.
I think it's, like, also... Right now, we're all focused... Not right now, obviously, but during the 1700s... We're not talking about poetry. We're not talking about anything else besides, like, when you're opening a textbook for American history and you want, okay, let's read about the 1700s. The first thing you're going to see is the Revolutionary War. That's all you're going to read about.
George Washington. Like, all of these main, like, our founding fathers is what you hear about.
Who just happened to all be white old men.
Yes.
So then you see this poet who was a slave who came here at the age of 8 and she became so popular. It's a big deal, so that's why she is so important. That, like, people, like, everyone was so against, like, I guess, African-American people, and she's out here doing all of this.
And not only was she was a slave who had really, like, good owners. Like, her owners loved her and cared for her, which is unheard of, exactly.
It's also just so important that students hear her story. I obviously heard about her before, and I think it was important that I did hear about her, because, like, not just in our history classes, in our English classes... Same story as history. We're only hearing about, like, the white old men. We're not hearing much about women or of anybody besides white men. So she kind of shows us that education can change your life. Like, she literally came here as a slave, and her getting this education just changed everything for her.
Yeah, it completely changed her life. She wouldn't be able to be a poet if she wasn't able to speak English or any of the other languages that influenced poetry in the past. But she's also so important for students to hear about because she has such good, she's such a good example of what a good person should be like. And she has such good character traits. Like, she had perseverance. Like, in there was a war happening, and she was like, while that was all happening, she was fighting to get her second, like, poetry book published. And she wanted to keep, like, changing the world in her own way. And she was also, she focused on finding her own happiness. After her owners died, it has to be a huge loss for her.
Because, well, obviously, if, like, you're a regular slave with terrible owners, like, oh, woohoo, like, the master's died. But, like, these people were her family. She took on their last name. Typically, like, some slaves do that, kind of just they have to. But she took on her last name and used her last name while she wrote things.
Yeah, she could have easily just gone by Phyllis or another pen name.
I literally am not sure on the basis of this at all. I think sometimes she would actually write anonymously just to kind of
keep I'm sure because low. Being a just, woman in that time period, people wouldn't just, take your yeah. poetry seriously. And then the last character trait she showed us is that she's so kind-hearted. Like, in The Liberty Kids, which did not do her character justice because...
Yeah, she was only in, like, one.
She was in, like, 2 minutes of it yeah. out of the 23-minute episode we yeah. watched prior to doing this podcast. But, like, she took them in, no questions asked. And I think that was it's a good trait to show students.
It was just showing people how it's, like, she was willing to help always. Her situation was not the best, obviously better than others, and she knew that, and she was willing to help.
Yeah. Okay, so all in all, that's our podcast.
That's Phyllis Wheatley, everybody. Thank you guys so much for listening.
This is Her Legacy.